Incepticast.
That's right. This is a very special episode. As I said last, by the way, my name is Josh, and this is Josh Figures It Out. But it's not just any episode of Josh Figures It Out. It is going to be one, as I teased last time, this is one of the 10 pilot ideas that I came up with back in episode 2 that I wanted to try out at some point. I already tried one. I did the episode with my dad a couple weeks ago. Now it's time for another one. It's a podcast within a podcast. Levels within levels. It is Incepticast. And that's fun to say. And it's also fun to do. Brah! I might just throw that in there at random spots. Even though I can already tell it's... I should back off the microphone next time I do it. I think I might be blowing your guys' ears out. I apologize.
Brah!
Okay, last time. Sorry, it's addictive. We are skipping theme song crowdsourcing today because we have too much other stuff to get to. I did get all your submissions. I got all your votes. I can tell you that the winner of the chord progression was... chord progression number one! Yeah. This one, chord progression number one. The next thing that I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to record, figure out a vocal melody to go on top of it. If I even want to go in a melodic direction, maybe I just want to kind of talk over it, like, you're listening to Josh Figures It Out. Ooh, yeah. We're going to have to figure that out next episode. So what's going to happen today? I'm going to take care of a little bit of business. I've got some Twitter questions from you guys to get to. I want to talk about another podcast. I'm going to do a review of a podcast that was recommended to me by a couple of you guys. Then we're going to play an entirely different podcast in its entirety. And then we'll come back and we will talk to the creator of that podcast about his process making the podcast. And I'm going to try to break the record for amount of time saying podcast in a single episode. Podcast, 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 podcast. And then we'll talk a little bit about True Detective, and I'll see you guys later. So first of all, Twitter questions from you guys, where you ask me things on Twitter, and I answer them. Jeff at Red Sea Dragon says, Surge or Scars on Broadway? Man, do you even have to ask? Jesus, Surge, obviously. I mean, I haven't loved everything Serge Tankian has done during his solo career. I think some of his stuff sounds a little generic, but he can't even compete on the generic scale with Scars on Broadway, which is just the most boring, terrible crap. And I really expected more from Darren. I thought he was very, very talented. I loved his contributions to System. I even loved the songs he fronted in System, but no. Just no to Scars on Broadway. Lords of Creation, at Lords of Creation, says, question for podcast. If God is all-powerful, can he create a rock so big that he himself cannot lift it? That's a good question. That's a meaty question. My gut says, yes, God could. Here's the way I think about it. Because, like, imagine God was a computer programmer, and the world, the universe, is like a computer program. I very much subscribe to Leibniz's conception of a watchmaker god, basically somebody who created all the initial parameters for the universe and then kind of set it in motion. And I guess a watchmaker god is similar to a programmer god. Basically, imagine somebody who created this insane source code for the universe and then compiled it, and we're just inside this program that's been compiling and running for billions of years. Now, could God program an object that, once coded and run, he would no longer be able to edit it? It's kind of another way of asking the same question. And yeah, I'm pretty sure he could. From my evidence programming, you can create something that will just cause your program to shut down, might even like break your computer if you're really going into the ones and zeros of the machine code. which God would obviously have access to. So yes, I think God could code something into this program that would irretrievably fuck up the system to the point that even God could not fix it. So yes, I just answered that impossible to answer question. Boom, Lords of Creation. At Sokovich, hey, what's up, Sokovich? At Sokovich asks, if you had to move, what state would you choose? Well, I've always said I think I'm either going to live in LA or New York, just because, you know, entertainment industry, that's where all the options are. I'm already in LA, I think, so I'm pretty sure New York would be my second choice. On the other hand, I do have family in Texas. I've been to Austin a few times. Austin is one of my favorite cities. So maybe Austin. It's something I've thought about before. Or, I don't know, you know, Dallas. Texas is kind of booming in general. There's supposed to be a lot of jobs in Texas. Maybe I should move to Texas. What's stopping me? This is a matter that will require more thought. But still, New York is probably my number two. At Mighty Boogdish asks, have you given up on trying to eat healthier after leaving your job, or is it nuggets and Chick-fil-A all day? Mighty Boogdish, it's basically been a lot of nuggets. I won't lie. I try to exercise every morning. I don't succeed every morning, but I do try to at least go for a run every morning. And I've been trying to drink those green drinks from Press Juicery so I at least get some vegetable material inside of my body. But I won't lie, but eating a lot of fast food. I have not, however, eaten Chick-fil-A in 8 months at this point. I may never eat Chick-fil-A again. Because when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. As tasty as Chick-fil-A is. One more Twitter question from at Cody McCraw. He says, do you side with Hawking when he says E.T. would destroy us immediately? Or do you believe a society that advanced must be benevolent? Wow, that is a great question. That is a meaty, meaty question. That is something I can sink my teeth into. So thank you for that, Cody. Basically, the short answer is I agree with Hawking. But I should clarify a little bit. And let me bring back the original Hawking quote that Cody is referring to. When asked about the odds of an alien invasion, Stephen Hawking said this. I think it would be a disaster. The extraterrestrials would probably be far in advance of us. The history of advanced races meeting more primitive people on this planet is not very happy, and they were the same species. I think we should keep our heads low. I think that's, and I largely agree with that. My main difference with Hawking is that I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I do believe that there could be a benevolent, super advanced alien race that might find us and have no interest in attacking us. Hawking is referring to Earth civilizations as his example, and I'll refer to one. I think of, like, Edo, Japan, you know, Japan between the 17th and 19th century, who was a very isolationist culture. They didn't really fight any wars. They didn't get involved in other nations' business. They focused entirely on domestic policy and cultural and intellectual growth, and they were able to create a great society and a prosperous society based entirely on that, focusing on peaceful measures instead of taking from other cultures. It's possible to create a great society that is a peaceful and benevolent society. I think there are strong examples of that, and I think it's totally possible that an alien race might, I don't know, have hit the singularity centuries ago and decided they don't need war or poverty anymore, and so come down to our planet and just, you know, we come in peace, take me to your leader, we want to offer you all the secrets of, you know, living forever and food that tastes good and doesn't make you fat and orgasms that last for hours or whatever else aliens would have to offer us. At the same time, do I think that's a likely outcome? No. I think it's more likely that an alien invasion would be similar to Europeans invading America and basically wiping out the indigenous population and taking their land and resources. I think any aliens that come to us would most likely have had to conquer other planets in the past and would therefore be more like a resource-hungry war machine. This is entirely based on our Earth knowledge, which is the only thing we have to draw this sort of knowledge from, but patterns in nature tend to repeat themselves at higher and higher levels. Viruses attack cells. people attack people, nations attack nations. We can only assume planets attack other planets. I mean, after all, if you were an alien coming to Earth thinking that you'd like to live here, what would your move be? I mean, look at the history of mankind. We are an incredibly violent and incredibly dangerous species. We are by far the most dangerous species on planet Earth. It stands to reason that if an alien did come here, they would at least want to try to subdue us in some way first. Maybe they've got some sort of peaceful mind control ray, so we would just peacefully become their slaves. That's probably the best case scenario in that situation. But Hawking is, I think, right. Alien invasions are not likely to end well for us, and we should watch our backs if we're going to try to communicate with them. Great question, Cody. Now, before we dive into our podcast within a podcast, a couple of you guys tweeted me at Radio TFB a couple weeks ago and told me that this podcast, Josh Figures It Out, reminded me of another podcast they were a fan of called Wiretap on CBC. Fucking Canadian, God. So I burrowed deep underground and I retrieved this podcast from the Mole People and brought it back up to civilization and listened to a couple of episodes. Wiretap is hosted by Jonathan Goldstein, and every episode it's like 25, 26 minutes long, and it's a series of stories and interviews of people based around a central theme. The two episodes I listened to, the first one was kind of about the end of the world. It touched a little bit about the beat poet Gregory Corso's relationship with his mother late in his life. Then it started interviewing a cosmologist who was talking about the end of the universe. That segued to talking to an expert on Buddhism and their beliefs in death and reincarnation. And then a little tidbit about the host Goldstein was turning 45 soon and how that turned into his own thoughts on mortality. The second episode I listened to started with a guy who had this enormous teddy bear collection, which was actually pretty funny, and then kind of started riffing on the idea of a personal sanctuary in the middle of our chaotic lives. You know, a mom who discovered World of Warcraft and thought, and, you know, kind of became an elf and just lived peacefully in this Warcraft world. And then a couple of humor pieces about a guy who was stealing public bathroom keys so he could use their bathrooms, and a guy who built a portable cardboard house that he was walking around with. These kind of whimsical humor pieces, fake phone conversations. Mostly, like, the first episode of this I loved. I think it was definitely the better of the two. I mean, anything that combines cosmology and Buddhism is catnip to me. I loved that section that was talking about the different ways the universe could end. You know, he was focusing on the fact that the universe started with a Big Bang and could and is currently expanding, but could end with the universe retracting into a big crunch, and how he thought that might be a more satisfying ending than the other one he discussed, which was the big rip, which was the universe just keeps expanding and accelerating faster and faster until the fabric of space-time comes apart. Personally, my scariest end-of-the-universe scenario is the one where the universe just expands slower and slower until it stops expanding altogether. And then the second law of thermodynamics takes over, and because order always eventually becomes chaos, according to the second law of thermodynamics, everything drifts towards entropy. So what we would end up with billions of years in the future, according to that scenario, is just kind of static. A heat death. Just molecules bouncing around, but no people, no planets, no stars, none of that. And that would just be how the universe would continue forever. And that's to me, is even the scariest situation. But I loved how that segued into the Buddhist concept about how there is no real pure nothingness, that you can never completely take something away, that something, some elements will always remain, that there is no true death, that the soul always stays behind and has the possibility of either nirvana or reincarnation. I mean, that's not just the big hope of any human, hoping that after you die, some part of you lives on. That's kind of the hope of humanity itself. We know that we're in the universe for a short period of time. We just hope that after we disappear, we leave some part of us behind. We've made some sort of permanent hopefully positive impact on the universe. So I thought that was a really interesting episode. The second one I did not like as much. I did love the interview with the guy who owns a huge teddy bear collection. That was great. This very self-aware guy who realizes how crazy he is, but still derives some comfort from his doll collection. As crazy as that man is, I thought it was kind of a cool interview. The pre-written humor pieces did not do it for me quite as much. Goldstein kind of has these phone interviews of guys who are telling absurd stories about how they're stealing public bathroom keys for nefarious purposes or whatever. But it's super dry, and it's not that funny. And it's only like 5 minutes, but it feels like the best show, you know, if you've ever listened to that on WFMU when it was still around. It feels like those prank phone calls, but a lot shorter and not nearly as funny. So that was a strike against it. I like it more when he sticks to that quasi-profound tone. You know, it almost reminds me of a less journalistic and more offbeat This American Life sensibility, which I thought was really cool. I like that tone of open-minded curiosity. That's the kind of thing that I'm trying to reach for on this podcast. So that's Wiretap on CBC. Unfortunately, there's only 2 episodes available at a time, usually. I think after that, the CBC takes them down. So you won't necessarily be able to listen to those 2 episodes, but take a listen. It's, you know, it's a short podcast, and I think there was definitely some interesting material there, even if not all of it worked for me. Thank you guys for recommending it. Now, we need to go deeper. It's time to go down a level and plunge into the podcast within a podcast. And this first ever podcast within a podcast was sent to me by a guy named Nate. Nate is a comic fan, and he has created a podcast called Journey into Comics. You can find it. You can listen to the first episode at journeyintocomics.podbean.com. I am not going to say much more in introduction. I'm just going to descend a level into this podcast of it, a podcast, and then I'll see you guys on the other side. So, Nate, take it away.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Journey into Comics, the podcast that takes you through all of time and space. My name is Nate Phillips. If you don't know me, I come from a small town of about 6,000 people. Not a lot to do there. I was born and raised in said small town, currently living in the Chicagoland area, and I am a dealer of blackjack. Now, that being said, let's start with work. Having a job fucking sucks, but it's awesome. Because you make money, and money is good and evil all at once. Being that I work at a casino, there's a lot of, I don't know how you would word it. There's a lot of strange things that happen. I've seen people walk up with $10,000, and in 1 or 2 hands of blackjack, they have $0 in front of them. And in my head, I'm going, wow, that was the entire total of my collective debt. Way to make me feel fucking tiny, you piece of shit. And then I've also had success stories where people are first-time gamblers, don't know what they're doing, they're just having fun. They walk away making $700, $800, $900, and they're the most excited I've ever seen a person. They thank you a million times because it's this great thing. And then at the same time, those same people could very well become the kind of people that get bamboozled and end up being addicted to gambling, which is a real thing. You can very well become addicted to gambling because a lot of the way that the people who, in fact, gamble look at it is, I've lost this much, so if I can come in and make up that big of a loss, then I'll have my money back from the casino and I don't ever need to go back. But the problem is they never make their money back. If you talk to the average gambler, they would probably say they buy in per night at $500. So if they lose $500 in 5 days, $2,500, okay? Now they're chasing $2,500. So in a month, they go from losing $500 to, what is it, like $35,000, I think would maybe be the total. 500 times 30, we'll call 30 the average. Redo my math. Wow. Showing that I work at a casino. That would be $15,000, okay, that they lose in a month collectively. So now, in a year, in the first month of the year, they are chasing $15,000. Sometimes people get it back. They get lucky. They make a shoot ton of money. I intentionally, censored myself there. I don't care. But they make a ton of money, and then they leave, and they never come back. But for the most part, people are hooked on gambling because they never will get the experience of their first win again, and that's all they want. At the end of the day, all those people want is to feel the feeling they got the first time they stepped into the casino and made money. To me, that is a impossible task. Because here's the thing. When you go into a casino for the first time and you've never gambled before, especially on table games, there's a lot of really blind luck. Just stupidity. You know? So, that being said, you don't know what you're doing. And all of a sudden, if there's a lot of money in front of you, and obviously the word a lot of money can vary between person to person. What may be $1,500 is a lot to one person. That might be, you know, clown shoes to another person. Dogma reference. So, back at it, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about everything else. I have been in a band for 10 years. I've been making music for 10 years with the same band. We've had a few member changes. That's kind of cool. We're not the greatest thing since sliced bread. We're just doing it to have fun. It's for the love of music. It's not because I want to make $20 billion. If anybody would like to pay for $20 billion, I'd be more than happy. I don't see that happening, though. I love making music because it's an outlet. It's a release. It's somewhere that if I'm extraordinarily pissed off or if I'm extraordinarily sad, hell, if I'm extraordinarily happy, I'm going to go and I'm going to jam and I'm going to feel better about myself. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll feel worse about myself, but that's not the point. Let's move on. You know a little bit about me. I know nothing about my listeners because I don't know who's going to listen to this. I might have 200 people listen to it. I might have 2,000 people listen to this, and it doesn't matter to me. I just want to talk. I like to talk. It's what I do for a living. I mean, 60% of me dealing at a casino is talking to people. I have to reassure them that, hey, it's okay. You lost your money. It's okay. We can always get it back. I always tell that to my players. We can get the money back. You just have to have one good shoe. You just have to have one good hand. You just have to know when to bet the right amount. You got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. I don't know who fucking wrote that stupid song, but it's in my head. Anyways, I want to talk a little bit about, initially, I was going to call this podcast My Comic Book Life, and focus mainly on just me and comic books, and that's a part of me, but there's so much more. But I'm going to go ahead and shed some light on my affinity and love for comics, and go from there. So I live up in the Chicagoland area with my girlfriend. Most of you know her as the Woods Woman, a.k.a. Sarah. And because of her dad, I got into collecting comics on an extreme level. He started collecting the Amazing Spider-Man series. There are 700 issues of the Amazing Spider-Man. And also with that, there are 5, 6, 7 point issues where it was not actually a number, like it was like 700.1, 700.2, that it was like, hey, this isn't really the story, but this is a little side story that'll just be fun for you to read that we didn't want to try to fit into the main story, right? We have, so he started collecting them and had a list, and he's like just on a piece of paper just wrote out like what ones he had, and then I, with my extreme OCD, went on Photoshop and I made a really nice professional list. If you would like that list and you know where to find me, I will gladly send you a file of that list so you can print it off for yourself for your own checklist, right? So I make this really elaborate, very nice checklist, and with that being said, the checklist, I start filling it out, and then I'm like, wow, there's so many holes. Let's fix that. So I went on a binge, and really, I bought way too many comics way too fast and was kind of stupid. I didn't really think about it. I'm a lot smarter now, but whatever. That's in the past. here's the present. That moment of collecting comics with him, which we still do. We still collect Amazing Spider-Mans and the original X-Men and the Avengers, Fantastic Four, Tales to Astonish / The Incredible Hulk. They bled into each other. But really, from there, I wanted to start my own collection and have all of whatever I wanted to collect. So I jumped onto the Marvel, all-new Marvel launching point they had last year, I think it was, early last year, like November or October, something like that. Anyways, started collecting all-new X-Men, which is phenomenal. If you don't have it, give it a read. You will not be disappointed. It's a very interesting take on the X-Men. And then I also started collecting Superior Spider-Man, which a lot of that came from reading the end of Amazing Spider-Man. The Amazing Spider-Man ends, and as soon as it ended, the beginning of Superior Spider-Man starts, and Superior Spider-Man is brilliant. They're going to probably end Superior Spider-Man around issues 30 or 31 or 35, I don't... Somewhere, they're planning on ending it, and they're going to bring Amazing Spider-Man back, so essentially it's going to be Amazing Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man, back to Amazing Spider-Man. Really cool. So... I started collecting Superior Spider-Mans. I have all of them to date, still working on the variants. I, upon collecting this, started talking Pat into, hey, we should go for some of the harder to get, rarer Amazing Spider-Mans. Now, we've ended up with some great ones. We do have issues 131 to current, so that's like a boatload. But we also have some cool older issues. Issue 13, the first appearance of Mysterio. Issues 96 through 98, which were the drug issues. If you don't know about the drug issues, essentially the Comic Code Authority said, hey, Spider-Man, if you don't have the Comic Code Authority approval stamp, we can't print you. And they printed it anyways because the whole thing was about Harry Osborn being addicted to drugs. So they did a 3-issue story arc that was about drugs, and the Comic Code Authority said, no, you can't, but they printed it anyways. So they're really cool to have because they're different from the rest of the comics in those runs. We have the first appearance of the Punisher, which is issue 129. We have the they relaunched Amazing Spider-Man at like issue 4 something. I can't remember what it is. 440 something, 42 I think. I'm not sure. Anyways, when they redid it, they started renumbering it, issue 1, 2, 3, and so on, and people were like, no, 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 you got to bring back the old numbering system because these are still, the story is still continuing. So before they brought back the old story or the old numbering system, they actually did issue 36. If you have issue 36, you know its importance. And if you don't have issue 36, I'm going to tell you its importance. Issue 36 is what we call the 9/11 tribute issue. The cover is 100% blacked out. There's no art at all. It just says The Amazing Spider-Man in a white font, very basic. And it's just about Spidey being helpless and not being able to help anybody during 9/11. And it was a really dark, dramatic take, but it's such a great, great read. I strongly suggest that. So moving on from like the Marvel world, I started collecting the newer Batmans. They did the new 52. DC did their relaunch before Marvel did, but they did New 52, and I pretty much only read Batman. I know that's kind of biased of me, so I read like Batman, Batman the Dark Knight, Batman and Robin, which has become Batman and fill in the blank, don't ask why, and Detective Comics, Batman. So from there, in doing all this, my buddy said, hey, do you watch The Walking Dead? And I was like, no, at the time I couldn't get into the show. And he's like, dude, read the comics first and you'll totally love it. So he gave me a flash drive with all the comics on it, issues 1 to like issue 105, I think. And in 4 days, I read all the issues, every single issue, everything. I knew everything about the show and I had watched the show. I had read the comics. I'd got everything was taken care of. I was an expert on The Walking Dead in 4 days. Then came the rain. I started collecting The Walking Deads. What a trip. In 1 year, I have collected 116 issues of The Walking Dead out of 118. The only two I don't have are issues 1 and 2, which I would gladly take as donation. If you have a first print, I would be greatly appreciated. The first issue only had 7,300 in its first run. So that means there were 7,300 comics printed of issue 1, and that was it. They did a couple reprints. I'm not into reprints. I like first print. That's how I am. Issue 2 had 6,100 roughly printed of it, and that was pretty low run as well. They're really pricey. They're the only two I don't have. But again, if you would like to donate to me, I will not say no, obviously. So that's a little bit about my comics. It's a lot of fun to be a collector of comics, but it's also like a job. And I say that because it's a job. You have to keep on it. You can't say, oh, I'll pick up those issues in a few weeks. Don't worry about it. Because guess what? In a few weeks, those issues might be gone, and then you're hunting on eBay. Then you got to do all that jazz. If you buy it at base price, if you buy it the day it comes out, no matter what, you're going to spend less money than if you have to go on eBay a week or 3 weeks later when, oh shit, some first appearance I didn't know was going to be important came out on this specific issue. I need to catch it. So back to catching those issues. So it's a lot of fun to be a collector, but it's a lot of stress. I don't just collect comics. I collect video games. I collect collector's editions of things. It's dumb, but at the same time, I'm in the mindset now that people 40, 50, 60 years ago, if they would have been in that mindset, I think this world would be different. I mean, I to this day wish I had a time machine. I so wish I had a time machine, and all I would do, one small, tiny, little, minuscule thing that I would do is I would go back in time, I'd find my father at a very young age, and I would find my grandparents at a very young age, and I'd go, look, you'll never believe this, but trust me, many, many years down the road, these comics are going to be valuable. Go buy these comics. Go buy multiple issues of these comics and store them in a vault and make sure no one touches that vault. Because, see, that move would propel my future to where I would have been born into a nest egg. And that's great. I would have these comics. I could maybe sell some. I could maybe not sell some. Who knows? It would be a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun, I should say, to think about if time machines existed. That's a great way to lead into my next point. Time machines. Let's talk Doctor Who. Now, some of you who don't know Doctor Who, I'll give you a brief summary. For those of you who watch the show, well, let's go along for the ride together. Doctor Who was created in 1963 by the BBC. And essentially it was supposed to be just a kid's show. And they saw longevity in it. It actually premiered the day after JFK's assassination, and it had very low numbers on its debut episode. So they were like, oh, wow, the show's going to tank and be awful. So they actually replayed this first episode right before the second episode the next week, and the ratings went through the roof. Everybody was like, wow, this show is really special. And that's obviously in the 60s, so, you know, it was a lot more acting and a lot less special effect. It was you were sitting there relying on what your actors could do. So they create this show. This guy, the Doctor, travels in a TARDIS, which stands for Time and Relative Dimension in Space. Adjust my nerd glasses. He is a Time Lord for the planet Gallifrey. Now, a Time Lord has a great ability. If a Time Lord dies or gets severely injured, they regenerate. And all that did was allow them to essentially make the Doctor whoever they wanted it to be. Once the first guy decided he was done, which really he wasn't telling BBC he was done, they told him, hey, we're moving on from you, nothing against you, but you've driven yourself into a state of dementia because of the show, and we don't want to see that. So there are 12 Doctors. In canon, there are actually 13 Doctors. Whatever. So most modern Doctors, Peter Capaldi, pretty awesome. He's an older dude. He's actually known for a show called The Thick of It, where he is filthy. So for him to become the Doctor is really interesting. He's been a huge Doctor Who fan for his whole life, as actually one of the interviews said. But see, the great thing about Doctor Who, I was introduced to it in 2007, and was told, watch this show. I watched a random episode, had no idea what was going on, and was given the first two seasons box sets. Here, watch these DVDs. That's how long ago. DVDs. Not Blu-ray, folks. We're talking DVDs. Not even VHS. That's a little too old school. We're going DVD. So, get this DVD box sets. And over Memorial Day weekend of 2007, I power watched 26 episodes of Doctor Who. Wow. Brilliant. If you can watch the first two seasons and get through just the touch of cheekiness, it is seriously one of the greatest written television shows of all time. And I will stand by that. All I'm saying is give the show a chance. Because you never know. I've given Strange Things a chance. Actually, I'll tell a kind of odd story. Ellis Fam will partially appreciate this. If you have no idea what Ellis Fam is and have no idea what I'm talking about, then don't worry about it. You're going to hear a cool story and be like, oh, that's interesting. So, 2012? Yeah, 2012. I started heavily listening to the Jason Ellis Show. And one of my favorite parts of the Jason Ellis Show were two people that weren't Ellis, actually. It was Josh Rawdog Richmond and Jason Mayhem Miller. And one day they were in studio and they were talking, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the movie Enter the Void gets brought up. And they're like, dude, you know, they're talking on the show, this show is messed up. Or this movie's messed up. Check it out. Telling all these people on the radio. And so I actually took the time to go and watch it. And I remember I messaged Mayhem on Facebook. And I was like, dude, that movie was trippy as fuck. Like, the idea behind the movie is just messed up. It makes you really think. It's really crazy. But so I'm, you know, talk to Mayhem there. And then we end up going to Ellis Mania. And I remember sitting down with Mayhem while him and Joel Mills ate a pizza and talking to him about Enter the Void. And he was like, yeah, like, isn't that whole movie just way messed up? Now, the old me, the me who I used to be before the Ellis Show, the me who I used to be before I had any confidence in who I am, that person would not have given anything a chance. Just out of fear. What if I spend 2 or 3 hours watching something that turns into nothing, you know? So anyways, I'm just saying, give Doctor Who a chance, everybody. If you do watch the show already, that's awesome. If you don't watch the show, get on it. I'm going to jump to some questions on my Instagram. I have very few, but Wolfman812 wants to know, who are my favorite heroes and villains on both sides? I'm assuming he's talking about Marvel and DC. And some of the other questions he asked, I actually answered before this, so I won't necessarily address them, but I will also address my favorite story arc in comics. So, first and foremost, my hero on the Marvel side, my favorite hero on the Marvel side, hands down, is Spider-Man. Peter Parker is awesome, but what makes a great hero is never the hero. To the rogue gallery of villains. How creative can you be with your villains? So, Spider-Man's villains, pretty awesome. So to answer, and this is going to throw people off, my favorite villain from the Marvel Universe is not a Spider-Man villain. Granted, I like a lot of the Spider-Man villains. Shocker, Scorpion, Mysterio is my favorite Spider-Man villain, but he's not my favorite Marvel villain. My favorite Marvel villain is Thanos. Batshit crazy, over-the-top, psychotic, just madman. The Mad Titan Thanos, you know? To the DC side of things, my favorite DC hero, as you guys already know, is Batman. I said that earlier. It's all I read. I don't mind The Flash. I don't mind Green Lantern. Fuck Aquaman. Whatever Wonder Woman. Man of Steel was a great movie. But Superman's not my favorite. Batman, Batman, Batman. So my favorite villain is actually a Batman villain. It is the Riddler. He's off his fucking rocker. The main thing the Riddler wants to do is just prove that he is smarter than Batman. That's his whole purpose. He wants to outsmart not only Batman, but Bruce Wayne. And I think that's just brilliant. It's not about killing people. He does kill people, but it's not about that. It's about everything else. So I have to go with the Riddler. Like, I wrote actually I wrote down in my notes, I wrote Joker, but I have to go with my gut. It's the Riddler. The Riddler is my favorite. And I think David Tennant, who actually played the 10th Doctor, would make a phenomenal Riddler in future movies. So if anybody in Hollywood hears that, get that fucking rumor started. Let's make it happen. All right, my next question is from AZ Red Dragons, also known as Jason from Know You Are. Know You Are is the shit, by the way. Anyways, he says, in GTA 5, I have to shoot this motherfucker off my boat while being towed down the freeway, and I'm driving behind it, and I can't figure out how to shoot that son of a bitch. Yeah, I know, you're Michael, I remember that. It was a very tough mission, and all I can tell you is, try harder. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. Just try harder. You'll get it. Speaking of video games, I devastated recently, and I will not hold back on using that word. I devastated the Lego Marvel Super Heroes game. 100%ed it, got every achievement, got every character, downloaded the characters that I didn't have that were available for purchase. Microtransactions, the wave of the future. Anyways, I want to end my podcast by thanking all the people that got me here so far in this life. My parents, obviously, my sisters, even though he's kind of a prick, my stepdad, Sarah, my wolf pack, my bandmates, Ellis fam, the wolf knives. I don't know. Obviously, as far as my podcast is concerned, there's a big personal thanks that I need to put out there, and that is to Mr. Josh Richmond, also known as, and I'm sure everybody's tired of hearing it, he's also known as Raw Dog. He used to be on the Jason Ellis Show, and he has a podcast, Josh Figures It Out. Check it out. It's pretty much the coolest thing going. But I want to thank him because he gave me some words of encouragement leading up to me recording this, and hopefully those words of encouragement paid off and he can tell that I took his advice to heart. Now, that being said, we're going to end with one final thing. I'm going to actually let everyone ponder this question. What are you? Are you good? Are you evil? Are you somewhere in the middle? Because at the end of the day, you may not necessarily find yourself being a good or evil person, rather making the decision that may seem evil to some. That decision that may seem evil to some may actually be a great decision for other people, including yourself. But don't ever sell yourself short. Be yourself every day and don't be afraid to be yourself. You got one life. Don't be afraid to live it. This has, in fact, been Journey into Comics with me, Nate Phillips. This is the pilot episode. Hopefully there will be a second, maybe even a third. Thank you guys very much. Take care. And on that note, later.
And we are back. Whew. That was strange. Somebody took over my podcast for like 26 minutes. I feel like I had a god in my brain. I just watched Thor of the Dark World again, so now that's stuck in my head. Anyways, now that I've taken over the podcast again, let's talk to the creator of that podcast, who is here via Skype for the first time ever on my podcast. Actually for the first time ever. I've never Skyped anybody before. Nate, how does it feel to be my first ever Skype call?
I guess it's better than sloppy seconds, huh?
Yeah, right?
Seems pretty cool.
I know, man. Technology. I can call people through computers. This is amazing. Nate, you created a podcast and sent it in to me for my first ever Incepticast. It's called A Journey into Comics. So let's dig into this. Let's talk about this a little bit. Right off the bat, I want to say that the recording sounded fantastic. The vocal tone is great. I didn't hear a whole lot of background noise. How did you record this?
In my personal studio, actually, where my father lives, which is 2 hours away from me. We have our own studio where we've done full albums and whatnot. But I had a night to myself there, and I went for it. And
so this is like a music quality recording studio?
Yes, absolutely.
That explains a lot, because I was going to say, like, you know, I felt like the tone was crisp, the mic sounded great. Your voice sounds great. I think you've got a great broadcasting voice. It's got a nice sonority to it.
Wow, thank you very much. That's an awesome compliment, especially coming from you.
Oh, so. I do not think I have a particularly great broadcasting voice. I sound nasal and stuffed up constantly, so I'm giving you props there.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So, yeah, I used the Shure SM7B to record my vocals on.
A classic, one of the a famous vocal microphone.
It is, like, the best microphone in the whole entire world. But I thought, well, I record my vocals with it, I might as well just talk through it, and it actually came out exactly how I was hoping.
Yeah, oftentimes what works in like a vocal scenario works just as well. That's a dynamic mic, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I really like the way dynamics sound for podcasting. It really picks up the full frequency range, I think, that you need.
I completely agree with that. So, it just gives your voice such a warm tone when you're talking
into it,
you know?
Yeah. So that out of the way, let's dive into what you talked about on the podcast. And right off the bat, I was thrown a little bit because it's called Journey into Comics, but right off the bat, you started getting into your work life, your life as a blackjack dealer.
Yeah, you know, I had recorded a earlier take of my podcast, and it was just like, hey, this is comics, and there was no connection to who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found that when I'm listening to anybody on radio or podcast, if I know a little bit about the person, I'm instantly going to connect a lot quicker than if I'm just listening for information.
I think that's totally true. I do want to know about your background. And I think I really like the stories you were told about being a blackjack dealer. You made it sound like this like weird combination of drug dealer and best friend to like pick them back up again after they've blown all their money.
It really is. You know, the only thing about the dealing is, like, my schedule is so messed up. I'm working 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. every day. So, like, my concept of morning is, like, late afternoon for most people.
Well, and you're in a casino, which traditionally, you know, like, you don't see any clocks and there's no natural light. So it just feels like this, like, eternal day. That probably does throw you.
Oh, yeah. But that's why I do a lot of comic book reading, you know, in my spare time.
Do you feel guilty about the blackjack thing? The way you made it sound, you're like, man, you're luring people into this, like, dark world where they lose all their money, and then you're there to, like, pat them on the back and say, hey, it's okay, give it one more round. You can do it. You can get back on the horse.
It just depends how you look at it. Some days I do definitely feel sorry for certain people that gamble, especially newbies that don't really know what's going on. But as far as the what we call regular gamblers that I see every night when I'm at work,
I mean, I guess you figure they know what they're getting into.
They absolutely know what they're getting into, and if they have an attitude and they're angry, they're only mad at themselves. They just don't realize it.
Right. Oh, do people like yell at you all the time? Like you
motherfucker. Yeah. Oh yeah. My favorite thing to come back with people is they try to say something insulting, and it's usually they're not trying too hard. And I'm like, look, if you're gonna insult me, you're gonna have to try harder. My mother said worse to me.
Do you ever get accused of cheating?
Yeah, actually, I have people, sometimes there are shuffle machines for the cards, not always, certain games don't have those.
Right.
But sometimes people will be like, oh, that machine knows how to deal the cards, and I'm like, do you understand that it's a binary code, and like, it doesn't know how many people are on this game, it doesn't know what the dealer's position is on the game.
Right. It's not like sorting cards to screw you out of money, that's like impossible.
Exactly. It's literally just house advantage.
So I thought that stuff was fascinating. I really liked hearing about your career. I did think that was an odd choice to start off your first episode. Oftentimes what I like to hear from like a pilot episode of a podcast, you're right that you want to hear something about the person, but I think what you want to hear most of all is kind of outlining the vision for the podcast, you know, what this is going to be about, what this is, you know, what sort of material you're going to be talking about. And at first, I didn't really hear that, so I was unsure what I was listening to, especially because it wasn't comic related.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when I first recorded my first take of the pilot, I initially was going to call it My Comic Book Life, because it kind of tied in my personal life with what I enjoy. But then I thought, well, that could throw people off because I'm going to mainly talk about comic books and nerdy video games and such, you know.
Is it kind of like you're talking about your life like through the prism of comics or through the prism of your interests?
Well, yes and no. I find that I connect to, I mean, in the podcast, I talked a little bit about like my collecting, and that is such a big part of who I am outside of comics. Right. I'm very much a completionist, so you know, when it comes to doing something, I go as hard as I can to make sure it's as great as it can be. So I wanted to, in my podcast, kind of give people a touch of every part of me and just say, hope you like it.
And I think that's cool. I think hearing about your life is really interesting. But the way I would have started might have been like, hey, my name is Nate. So a little bit of what you're going to be in for on this podcast is talking about comics, and then maybe get into, hey, here's a little bit about me and my background.
Yeah, that's actually like a really great idea. I wish I would have heard that idea before I put it out there, but that's all right.
Hey, I mean, the whole point is like it's a pilot episode. You're trying things out. You're seeing what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what I talked about on my own pilot episode, is I have no idea what this is going to turn into. You just want to you record it, you throw it out there, and then you listen and you see what's working and what's not.
Yeah, absolutely. And so far, Josh Figures It Out is probably my favorite podcast, and that's not anything.
I'm only like 7 episodes in, so thank you. I don't feel like I'm on like Comedy Bang Bang level yet, but I do appreciate that.
I don't know. Hearing your dad on there was pretty awesome. You guys have a nice dichotomy between each other that's really, really fun to listen to.
I got a lot of great feedback on the episode of my dad. I definitely want to have him back soon. He was a fantastic guest.
And then obviously having Lynette on was good as well.
Yeah, and thank you, by the way, for the shout out at the end of your podcast. That was really nice. I'm glad I could help out a little bit. I kind of want to encourage people to try out this form because podcasting and doing radio has brought so much joy to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously you're being a part of the show for as long as you were. And, you know, you touched a lot of people's lives, maybe more than you realize. So it's cool to hear you in your own world being able to just open up to the best parts of who you are, you know?
Thank you, man. It's been a lot of fun for me, too. And for me, listening to you talk about your life was really, I thought that was really interesting, too. And to move on from you talking about your life to you talking about your comic collection, I did think the stuff about you talking about being a collector and how it's almost like a job, although it's a job where you lose money instead of getting money, but still how it's something that you had to put like daily work into, gave me an interesting look into that mindset.
Yeah, and funny you say that. Like, I got off work last night, and the first thing I did was found my package of comics that had been delivered in the mail and literally spent an hour and a half organizing, sorting, and putting them away. So it was like a fun end to my night.
I guess there is something very satisfying about that. I'm not a comic guy, but I have talked about my Magic the Gathering card collection in the past, and I will say, yeah, if you open a few booster packs and you spend the night looking at each card, filing it into your, you know, my file cabinet by color, it sounds like, wow, filing, how could that possibly be interesting? But it actually is like satisfying in a weird way.
It's satisfying, and I don't know about if it was the same for you in Magic. I used to do card collecting as well, more like X-Men card sets and stuff from, mm-hmm. like, you know, the 90s and whatnot. But for me, it's almost addictive to sit there and be like, okay, how do I want to organize these to make it to where I know where everything is, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, there is something addicting about it. And then you organize it, and you're like, wait, how could I, you know, refine my organizational, yeah, like how can I make it even more easy to find what I need, and then you just spend more and more time on it.
The spiral downward, right?
Yes. So when you think about your audience for this podcast, do you think of it as being mostly comic book fans or non-comic book fans?
Honestly, I think it's going to be a little of both. You know, I've had friends who I work with and otherwise listen and say, oh, wow, I was like not expecting you to open up like that, or I didn't know those things about you, and I've been friends with you for 10 years, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to touch kind of a little bit of everybody as far as who I want to listen. But honestly, the listeners are just going to be up to who finds me.
Right. Whoever's just kind of around. I will admit that being a non-comic book person myself, you know, I've seen a lot of comic book movies, but I've never been a book collector. I've never really dived into the comic books themselves. I will say that your discussion of like your history of collecting books, there were moments where it kind of lost me, where I'm like, okay, I don't really know anything about the Marvel DC universe and this specific Spider-Man collection, and I wonder if there is a way that you could make that kind of discussion more open to non-comic book fans, maybe describing more what's in each individual issue that you find interesting, or what really makes it special to you, or whether it would be a good place to dive in if you're a non-comic fan. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there are tons of awesome starting points. And interestingly enough, there's a comic that like I didn't even talk about on the podcast that is only going to be 60 issues long, which mm-hmm. is really short for a book. You know,
right?
But it's called Chew,
like C-H-E-W.
Yeah, Chew, mm-hmm. And it's about this guy, this detective, who has the ability to, if he eats anything, whatever he's eaten, he instantaneously in his head sees where the thing he ate came from. So he starts solving murder crimes by eating part of the murder victim and seeing.
That is fucked up.
It is absolutely fucked up, but like he sees how they died and he goes, oh, well, now I know who killed him, you know. And it's a super short book. It's a great starting point for somebody who's never read any comics, because it's kind of got a little bit of comedy, some mischief in there, and then it's overall really well written.
Yeah, I don't think you could have like a bizarre high concept premise like that that wouldn't have to have some comic angles in it of like, yeah. Oh no, I've got to eat another corpse crap.
Yeah. It's quite funny.
So you started talking about Doctor Who after that, and I've never watched Doctor Who. I was as soon as you started talking about Doctor Who, I'm like, oh God, you're another Doctor Who fan, because I feel surrounded on all sides by people who are like, this show is amazing. And I'm like, I do not see it. I can't see the appeal. But then you started talking about Enter the Void and how my own recommendation of something you didn't think you would like made you find an awesome movie. And it really is an awesome movie. That's an amazing movie.
But man, that was the trippiest thing I've ever watched.
It's unlike any other movie I've ever seen. Gaspar Noé is, he's a visionary.
Yeah, it was, you know, like I said, when you and Mayhem were talking about it, in my head I'm going, what's so messed up about this movie? I don't know if you could get like very creative, I guess.
Right. It takes a while for you to realize what's happening, but once it gets there,
it's like once the bathroom scene happens and you start to understand exactly what point of view the movie's going to take, you're just like, this could get really interesting really fast.
Yeah, it's a head trip. But so that made me think I'm probably being too judgmental of a show that a lot of people really love and I've never seen an episode of. So. Again, that's actually a place where I would ask. Being somebody who's had a knee-jerk hate reaction to Doctor Who my entire life, if you were going to recommend one episode that I should start with, I might just watch it.
Okay, you're going to want to go to season 3 of modern Doctor Who, not classic.
Because it dates back like decades, right?
1963, man. Long time. Right. But you'll go to season 3 of the current era and look for an episode called Blink. Now, Blink does not heavily feature the Doctor, but the villain in the episode is amazing, and the idea behind the episode is, it's just ridiculous, like, in the best way possible. It actually has a lot to do with some quantum physics ideas that exist in the world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very true.
I will watch that. I will watch that. You guys, podcast listeners, can hold me to it. I will, and I'll talk about my Doctor Who experience on a future episode.
That sounds exciting, actually. I'm excited to hear that.
That I think that basically after that you talked a little bit about my podcast inspiring you, which once again thank you very much, that's awesome, and then you kind of ended on a philosophical note, which I thought was a really cool, interesting touch.
It's just people need to know what they are. You know, everybody has a role in life, and if you don't know how to accept what you are or who you are, then you're just going to roam aimlessly and accomplish nothing.
Yeah, man, self-discovery, that's kind of like the whole purpose of life, and it's a ongoing, never-ending process. You could always discover something new about yourself.
If you don't learn something new every day, you're not doing something right, you know?
Right, man, that's living. So I think there we go. Thank you for being the first person ever to submit a podcast to my podcast, so I can do my podcast if it's a podcast. How many times can I say the word podcast in one sentence? I'm trying to break the record. But Nate, thank you for your submission. Thank you for and thank you for talking about making a podcast of me. And if anybody else wants to send their podcast episode to me to do a similar thing with it, I love hearing any sort of submission. Really, the weirder, the crazier, the more experimental, the better. Whatever you guys want to send me. RadioTFB@gmail.com. If you have a podcast episode between 15 and 30 minutes in length, just like this one, that you would like to talk and have an interview with me afterwards. Nate, it's been great talking to you.
You too, Josh.
Thank you very much, Nate.
Thank you. Take care, sir.
Okay, this episode is almost over. It is, but let's really quickly talk about this week's episode of True Detective. I hope you guys have been watching it along with me on HBO. So, watching this episode, man, this show does not like religion. They make that really clear throughout this episode. Matthew McConaughey goes on some great spiels about how religion is just a farce. I wrote down this amazing quote, "Religion is a language virus that dulls critical thinking." Although I thought that tent revival scene that opened up the episode was actually really cool. That was a great set. But I love just McConaughey just destroying religion. And then Harrelson trying to open up a defense of religion. But you're not buying it because it's coming from this loathsome guy's mouth. This loathsome hypocrite's mouth. I've been talking the last two episodes about how great McConaughey's been, but wow, Harrelson is the MVP of this episode. He completely kills it. He's just this cauldron of suppressed rage. Sometimes you could like see his lip quiver in rage at moments, and it's incredible. But then he also has that scene where he actually breaks down and tries to open up to his wife. Obviously not opening up entirely, he's not telling her that he's fucking around on her, but trying to explain how lost and confused he is and open up in as best as he knows how. And that was a great scene. Once again, this is an episode where not much happens. It seems like we're finally going to get some plot development as this episode ends, as they're finally going to confront their first suspect, which they've hinted is going to turn into a gunfight. But so far, the case has actually been the most boring episode of this show. As soon as they start talking about the details of the case, I tuned out a little bit. But the character work, and when we delve into McConaughey and Harrelson's personal lives, that stuff is fascinating. And seeing them play off each other, seeing them, these two different looks at what it means to be a detective and the way they criticize each other. You know, Harrelson saying that McConaughey is myopic and obsessed, and McConaughey saying that Harrelson is in denial about his true nature. And the ways that, you know, even those riffs on religion fit the character. At one point, McConaughey says that what's wrong with a preacher is that he is actually encouraging people's capacity for illusion and denial. But this is the same guy who last episode it was revealed is constantly actually literally having illusions because he's hallucinating and having these acid flashbacks. And then later on, how he actually uses religion to try to connect with a suspect without even blinking an eye, just, you know, straight up lying and saying, "You need to confess, you know, the Lord will shine his light down on you if you confess." This episode, towards the end, turns a little bit into a discourse on how the world needs bad men to keep the worst men away. And that's a theme that I've seen in a lot of other shows like this. But I think this is a really different and really interesting riff on that. And I love the running theme of how it's impossible to communicate what it means to be a human to another person. It's impossible to really completely connect because we can't really know that anybody else feels what we feel being a person, feels our true inner self, and how McConaughey compares it to like being inside of a locked room at all times as he points to his brain. I love all that philosophical discussion, and I think that stuff is stuff that I haven't really seen on TV before. I am, however, hoping that the plot starts to pick up a little bit. As much as I love those character details, I feel like, okay, these characters are established. I want to know how they got from point A to point B 17 years in the future. Let's see that stuff come together a little bit more. But I'm locked in at this point because I love the characters. I'm in for the journey. And I feel like things are just about to pick up plot-wise. So 5 episodes left. I'm excited to see where it goes. That, I think, wraps it up for Incepticast. Okay, I'm going to stop making that noise now. Thank you guys for listening once again. Check me out at Radio TFB on Twitter. Check out my iTunes page. Did you know that Josh Figures It Out is on iTunes? Go and, you know, rate us. Write a review. Go find us on Stitcher. Did you know that Josh Figures It Out is now on Stitcher? It's an app that you could use to kind of, listen to a whole bunch of different podcasts in a row. It makes it easier. Check us out there. We're on there. That, I think, wraps it up for today. I have blabbed enough. I'll talk to you guys next week when I have a very special and possibly controversial guest on the show. Stay tuned for that one. Oh, boy. Until next time, catch you guys on the flip side. Ciao.